we're back. Welcome to another episode of Mike, and Oscar, and we are done with 2018. Mm-hmm. And so 2019 immediately starts, and we're underway with the 2019-2020 Oscar Sprint. Runners take your march, saying we're off. But before we officially kick off any of our Oscar Sprint profiles, officially do anything with any of the 2019 movies, we thought we'd take a quick break. We put a bow on the 2018 film year, remind you of what we did for the Academy Awards for 2018, and we're going to kind of set the table today with our two-part 2019-2020 Academy Awards predictions, or 100% accurate picks, as we called them last year. We'll go over what we said last year. We'll pick what we're doing. We're doing that in two parts today. I am your co-host, Mike Wan. This is co-host also Mike.
I'm also Mike, and I have to be laughing without blinking and staring at Mike, because otherwise I'd be crying.
Yeah, we took like 36 hours away from each other, and it wasn't enough.
It wasn't that long?
Something like that, yeah.
I've just seen
maybe 24.
You,
I don't know.
Like Hereditary now, I'm Alex Wolff. I'm
time
just seeing
is a
you.
Flat circle.
In the corner of my room. No, I mean, listen, the fatigue of our 10 day in a row recording sessions.
We're not over it.
That is starting to set in now.
Yeah.
So the good news is
the Red Bull is wearing off. The Red Bull and cocaine we've done.
The good news is we have all these cool new movies to talk about.
Yes, so that is good news.
We might get perked up. I really had a good time putting this together. Mm-hmm. And we have a bunch of profiles for 2019 films for your 2019-2020 Oscars to talk about today. And then in part two of this mini-series, we're going to pick them. Is this what a miniseries is, finally?
We don't do TV. I can't comment on that. So what we're going to do, like Mike said, we're having a two-part, 100% accurate 2020 Oscars prediction special. We're going to call it the pictures and the picks. This is the pictures half of that equation we're going to go through. Setting the table, basically going through all the highlights, things you saw on different film festivals, some of them passed already, such as Sundance we'll go over, some of the big-time blockbusters, some under-the-radar things, things that different pundits in film Twitter and on the internet have already highlighted and been talking about. We're going to try to highlight as many of those films as we can, try to talk about who's attached to them, some interesting and different tidbits about each one of those. Then come our next episode, which will be coming to you in a couple days, we're going to actually pick, like we did last year in our 100% accurate 2019 Academy Awards predictions, mm-hmm. which were just spot on. We're going to pick the big six categories. So we'll be picking picture, director, and the four acting categories for the 2019-2020 film season. And then, starting next week, we're off and running with our first Oscar Sprint profile, which, yes. oddly enough, by the time this point last year, we had already completed. We already had Black Panther, a two-parter in the can. So this one, like we've been commenting on, if you've kept up with us on MMO Weekly, we've been a little slow going as far as movies in general for the 2019 year. Nothing really Academy Award worthy. Maybe some cartoons.
Lego Movie 2.
Animated feature ones, yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon 3. I mean, would either of us be shocked at the end of the day if they're in the best animated category?
Sure, but considering we're on the heels of the last 2 years, in February giving us Black Panther this past year, Best Picture nominee, Get Out the year before, original screenplay winner and Best Picture nominee. We don't have that yet this
Not
year,
yet.
So we're hoping maybe we're going to start off next week with Fighting With My Family. That'll probably be our first Oscar Sprint profile. We'll dive into it. Getting a lot of positive critical buzz. I will be personally shocked as a wrestling fan if this is the first wrestling movie to get serious Academy consideration. But who knows?
And the Academy Award goes to Nick Frost.
The Rock. Yeah. So let's talk about what we did for 2018 just as a means of wrapping up. We did do, like Mike said, we had Oscar Week around here in MMO headquarters. We did a different episode for 9 or 10 days in a row.
It was 10, yeah.
Oh, good God.
I just counted.
We were covering different category reviews where we went through nominee by nominee, laying out the case why each will and won't win Oscar gold. We did MMO Weekly. We had a couple interviews in there, one from Scott Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter, another one from Clayton Davis of awardscircuit.com. A couple different Oscar pundits. The Feinberg one was going into the Oscars. The Clayton Davis one was coming out of the Oscars, recapping the
that
night.
That worked so well.
It was so beautiful.
Happy about
they were
that.
So such good guests, and we appreciate them for giving us their time once again. We had, of course, our coverage of the show itself. We had a special MMO Weekly Sunday morning, Oscar Sunday morning show. We caught you up on all the latest breaking news for that going into the Oscars show. And then coming out of the Oscars, we stayed up late Oscar Sunday night, early into Monday morning, recapping the show in total. All of that is available on every stream we have, whether you're on TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, etc., etc. If you miss any part of Oscar Week 2019, don't worry, we have you covered. That's going to be up there for the duration. And a lot of that stuff you can listen to, even though it's not Oscar Week anymore. They have a long shelf life, like also Mike always likes to tell you.
So last year's Way Too Early Oscars was a hilarious listen. You had it on as I walked into the room.
We nailed it.
No, we didn't. No, we did not. So it's hysterical. If you go back, looked at what we picked, it's so ironic that I picked some movies I wound up hating, that Mike was touting movies he wound up just hating.
I picked movies that weren't even close, some of them.
But, you know, predictions are not our game. But what's cool about this episode is that we basically lay out the entire year
right.
to come in terms of Oscar contenders, at least as they stand now. And this is kind of quarter one's Oscar preview for next year. And I, like I said, I got really excited. And the excitement starts next week, like you said, Mike, Fighting With My Family, another one of those carryover from last week that we could not cover during Oscar week, but that we'll try to cover next week. Captain Marvel is the big one at the end of next week. And Black Panther brought the Marvel name into the Oscar conversation now.
Yeah, sure did.
Do we think Captain Marvel's going to be the one to break through, or do we think that this is going to be what winds up in maybe best visual effects?
It seems like Marvel's got a seat at the table for best visual effects, if nothing else, even though if Infinity War didn't break through by winning visual effects, you wonder if any Marvel movie will. Obviously, Black Panther didn't win. It went to First Man just this couple days ago. So yeah, that's interesting to me. I got to say, though, about Captain Marvel in general, the fact that it's Rotten Tomatoes score, the fact I said this on Twitter, too.
And this is its audience score, correct? Bears repeating.
Yeah, it's the want-to-see score, the anticipation score. But the fact that there are people out there that have no lives to the point where they are that upset about not only a female superhero, but one playing such an important role in this fictitious world of the MCU and playing such an important cog in the wheel here that they want to sink this thing's audience score. Get a fucking life if this is you. Get a life. There is no better thespian out there, really. I mean, Brie Larson is amazing. Kevin Feige has created this, enabled us to have this world on screen,
yes,
where we are lucky enough to partake in this and live in this world where our childhood comic books are literally coming to life, and you dare sit there in your basements and just downvote, like some kind of jackass.
That being said, what if it's Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah, okay.
Margot Robbie shows
espionage
up once in a while.
From the DCEU. I will enjoy. Yeah.
Even Shazam, Zachary Levy came out with that viral video just getting mad at people for doing what they did with Captain Marvel's audience score. And I thought that was a classy thing to do.
Sure.
I didn't watch the whole video, but
yeah, that said, like I think your Todd Phillips, Joaquin Phoenix thing is set in jest. We don't think it's them, obviously. But look, can we just let these things happen? If it's a bad movie, sure, get upset all you want. If it's not your cup of tea, sure, get upset. But these preemptive strikes where I'm going to show Marvel, I'll teach you to have a woman protagonist. Dude,
ridiculous.
Call your mother, all right? Get in touch with her. She wants to hear from you, I promise you. Just talk to her. You're upsetting her by doing this.
And your mother's probably a superhero, gosh darn
exactly,
it.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure you have strong, powerful women in your life.
Enough.
Don't do this.
The next major coming soon film that might be one of my most anticipated on the entire year, Mike, is Jordan Peele's Us.
Without a question.
Director, writer-director of Get Out. We've reviewed these trailers with a ton of praise. I've got five on it. I've got a lot more on it than that. But the performance by Lupita Nyong'o might be special as well. I mean, this is a movie that really could be the one from the early or late winter, early spring, that goes a distance.
Certainly got enough marketing done already. That's doing a great job on television with its commercials. It's doing a great job. If you go on film Twitter, you see the different props and gadgets and stuff that certain critics and pundits are getting ahead of schedule. Those giant golden scissors are going to a couple critics.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one pin yesterday. I don't think it was part of the movie. Somebody just did it as like an homage to the movie. But there was a pin that had golden scissors with a dotted line going through the outlines, the silhouettes of the family in Us that you were supposed to cut in half.
Oh,
I thought that was really cool. So they're doing a great job with marketing and being helped by that, whether that's part of the movie or not. Obviously, this is a biggie. We just talked about how Get Out 2 years ago was Jordan Peele's arrival to the scene. He won the DGA for Best New Director. He won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. Both of those well-deserved. And now we're all kind of excited, like, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, what's this one going to be?
And the trailers are good. But bottom line is, there's no way this movie doesn't sweep the big seven categories. So look, I'm just talking to my next year self. I just want him to laugh a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I just listened to last year's episode. But I think it could do well if it lands, and I'm really excited. Mike, The Beach Bum, starring Matthew McConaughey, lands on March 29th. Plot premise reads, a rebellious stoner named Moondog lives life by his own rules, directed by Harmony Korine, writer of Kids, director of Spring Breakers with Alien there, James Franco. It's going to be weird.
Yeah, it's Harmony Korine's second feature film. I never saw Spring Breakers, but I did see that Jeff Jarrett, who's a pro wrestler, was a religious fire and brimstone type of youth pastor in it, so I knew then it was destined for all sorts of Oscars fame and glory.
It's a crazy watch.
Yeah, like
we might want to do a retrospective.
Maybe we'll see how the beach room is. I know there are people on film Twitter, at least, that are looking forward to it. McConaughey's been in some weird stuff ever since Dallas Buyers Club, Serenity, yep. this year's White Boy Rick. He's not necessarily going for the mainstream pushes, but boy is he attached to some plots.
Moondog.
Some plots.
Yeah, Moondog looks like a sheepdog with his hair. It's just humongous. He's just like, his face is covered with hair, and he's got this like weird straight hair, down shoulder length.
Sure.
All that. It's a weird look. It's a weird looking poster. Can't wait to see more on it. Mike, animated feature Missing Link comes out April 17th. This is another animated film about Bigfoot, starring Hugh Jackman, Zoe Saldana, and company as voices.
Yeah, this is done by Annapurna, who's the production company. They've never received a nomination for animated feature. I don't know that they've even done that many. They've done a couple, I think, in my research. But the fact that the Boss Baby, the Croods, the Box Trolls in recent years have all made the cut for animated feature at the Oscars. Sure, why not a movie about the Missing Link? If it's done well enough, you're going to need, most years, you do get 5 animated feature nominees. We saw Capernaum this year. If you want to also count Ralph, too, kind of borderline as to whether or not in any given year they would have been nominated, making the cut this year to fill out that room of 5. So, yeah, be on the lookout for this one. Like you started this episode off with, we already have 2 kind of big names
as far as franchises,
yeah, really. Franchises go in animated. So you'd think 2 of those spots are probably already spoken for. Could be room here for Missing Link, though. April 17th, that comes up.
So Mike 1, definitely going to see Missing Link in his top 5 animated coming up. So you ready? Avengers Endgame comes out on April 26th. Again, I ask you, does Marvel build on its Oscars momentum? We don't think they've had the run-up like Lord of the Rings did, getting as many major nominations as Fellowship, as Two Towers, for the Return of the King, essentially swept the technicals and a couple of the major categories without an actor really involved, nominated but not involved, or not winning. So I wonder if Marvel is making that long, slow climb with this movie. Does this get another Best Picture nom and maybe like a Tony Stark nominated somewhere? Maybe they get one actor and they get a lot of technical noms and they win maybe 4 this time. I don't know.
Infinity War currently has the domestic opening record for $258 million. And last check, the tracking for Endgame is projected to be around $282 million for opening weekend in the U.S. So it's going to break records. As far as it not having the campaign yet, I think yet is the operative word, because it's smart by Marvel too. Why would you kind of bury your Captain Marvel lead here by promoting Endgame yet? So once we get to like March 15th, I expect it to be a full court press. Is that going to be enough to sustain its momentum through the Oscars? It's certainly going to be the most unique superhero film yet, because it's going to be a reported 3 hours. They were touring with the idea of including a intermission in the middle of it.
It's going to start out heavy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, obviously. Without question. So. And it's going to be a definite endpoint for some of our favorites. If the title doesn't give that away, allow me to spoil that for you.
I just wonder if there's the now or never imperative, like, we gotta vote this Marvel movie in.
Well, there may be, right? Because it's a new chapter for the Avengers after this.
It's going to be a new chapter, but we're still going to get 2 or 3 Marvel movies a year.
We're going to be just as MCU heavy. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
But maybe there's that old, guard, boy, let's reward how much Robert Downey Jr. did for superhero movies. Let's reward how much he did for one of the most powerful studios going right now, especially if you do kill off Iron Man, which... is there anyone out there predicting this goes otherwise for Tony Stark's character in the MCU? I think we all are expecting him to die, right? Unfortunately.
I don't know.
Really?
Don't know.
All right.
Last time, we're going to have to guess the plot as we go along.
Ooh,
here.
That's a tease.
It's the kind of episode we're thinking of. But basically, Mike, I'm a little rattled after the last movie where I picked Tony Stark to die painfully, and he did not.
Well, the last one also called, Avengers Infinity War, End of Tony anything. This is, I think, End Game. I don't know. Somebody's dying.
Somebody's dying, for sure. Tim Burton's Dumbo comes out March 29th.
I have no motivation to see this movie.
Me neither. DC's Shazam is April 5th.
I have no motivation to see this movie.
I kind of want to see that one a little bit.
It's more appealing than the Dumbo remake, I will say. I think both are going to make an astronomical amount of money, so they don't need me pitching in, and I'm probably going to end up seeing it anyway. But I just, either one of those is kind of cool. Right. You know, that's my reaction.
You got the High Life carryover with Robert Pattinson, a few other movies that may have a chance. Climax, I think, is still technically considered a 2018 film, foreign film. I don't know.
Una Sangria!
By the rules. But bottom line is, that's our first group of coming soon movies. Group two now is the Sundance buzz that we've been hearing. So just to give you a couple stats first. Last year, the notable films at Sundance that mattered in award season include Eighth Grade, Blind Spotting, Sorry to Bother You, Searching, Leave No Trace, Won't You Be My Neighbor, Mandy, The Rider, Hereditary. So even if, and none of those films got nominated, but, you know, a bunch of those films became some of our favorites on the year.
And you can't say they didn't get nominated for Oscars, but you can't say they didn't win awards. Eighth Grade obviously was a big winner in a lot of Independent Spirits WGA awards. Won't You Be My Neighbor won every Best Documentary award except for the Oscars.
And the rest of the documentaries at Sundance basically got nominated for Best Documentary at the Oscars. Hail Counting This Morning, This Evening, Minding the Gaff of Fathers and Sons, RBG, all at Sundance. All got nominated at the Oscars.
Yeah, the entire documentary feature category was featured at Sundance last year. That's kind of a cool little nugget.
That's 4 out of 5. That was strange to me. 2 years ago, Oscar noms include Icarus, which won Best Documentary. Yep. Strong Island, which was nominated. Call Me By Your Name won Best Adapted Screenplay.
And a lot of people think was the best movie of 2017.
Right? And Mudbound from Dee Rees there. So Sundance does have a history of getting those movies early buzz, and they can hold over throughout the year. And it's a platform for a lot of these films. So let's go through the Sundance lineup and talk about what are some standouts. First of all, coming out very soon, limited, and it's going to expand, is Apollo 11, Mike.
We have our first surefire bet to be an Oscar nominee, according to Mike One.
Documentary. It's a look at the Apollo 11 mission to land on the moon, led by Commander Neil Armstrong and pilot Buzz Aldrin, from the director of Dinosaur 13, which is apparently about, I've never seen this documentary, it's about finding the biggest T-Rex skeleton in history. This is Todd Douglas Miller's...
I have one in my backyard.
...previous doc. And he's doing Apollo 11 with a lot of real footage. You can hear reviews of it on Next Best Picture and some of our other friends' podcasts there. Early 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, 25 reviews, 8.5 IMDb audience score, 83 Metascore, which is the number that stood out to me.
Guardian just came out today, the Guardian, that periodical there that's online. They gave it a 5-star review. There's a lot of people I know I've seen on Twitter and film Twitter that are excited for this one. I think we're officially underway. I think, you know, as far as documentary feature categories goes, this one's going to officially kick off that Oscar sprint there for the 1920 season. Mm-hmm. And I totally expect to see that one come Oscar time as well. But then again, I said the same about Won't You Be My Neighbor. We all said the same about Won't You Be My Neighbor. We all know nothing Jon Snow.
The Report is a big narrative fiction film. In the aftermath of the 9/11 attack, CIA agents begin using extreme interrogation tactics on those they think were behind it. This stars Black Klansman's Adam Driver, American Beauty's Annette Bening, who plays Senator Dianne Feinstein. You got Mad Men's Jon Hamm. You got Beautiful Boy's Maura Tierney. The American's Matthew Reese, who's in like everything this year, by the way.
Yep.
Buster Scruggs, Tim Blake Nelson.
God, what a cast.
Ant-Man's Corey Stoll. And you can keep scrolling down, and it's one recognizable actor or actress after the other. This is written and directed by screenwriter turned director Scott Z. Burns, who's written several Soderbergh movies like Side Effects and Contagion, and goes all the way back to The Bourne Ultimatum.
He's a big Matt Damon fan.
Yeah.
He's been in all Damon's like recent last 10 years. Everything Damon's done that's been big, he's been involved with.
And he'll also be writing the next James Bond. So this seems like super heavy subject matter. I know Adam Driver's been getting a lot of buzz this year in general, but Annette Bening, is she this year's Glenn Close?
That's an interesting argument, and there's going to be a lot of people that attach onto her. It's weird to me that this is a Sundance movie, though. Like, this is like the Zero Dark Thirty type vibe of movie, and I don't, something that purports to be so critical of the government or so behind the scenes, generally, I don't think that's like a Sundance property.
Right.
I for whatever reason, I just don't remember that many political thrillers or that many, like, exposés on our government being done and premiered at Sundance. It feels odd to me, but nonetheless, Amazon saw enough value in it. They bought the worldwide distribution rights for $14 million. I'm going to have another piece that talks about what Amazon did at Sundance, and Amazon basically bought the town of Park City, Utah this year.
That's fascinating because they're trying to break through after Netflix winning awards.
Yeah, they're responding to Netflix's success this year at the Academy Awards, no question. But look, if you're going to put that kind of money into it, a $14 million investment, that's no small feat. That means something. If you're willing to put that much into it, you're going to probably do your best to promote your ass off for it and think it's going to be one of your heavy hitters. And so I imagine this one is going to at least find that niche audience that Zero Dark Thirties and those types of films have in award seasons past. They just don't typically win awards is the only thing.
Right. I'm a little skeptical at the moment. Next film, though, Awkwafina has been getting a ton of buzz about The Farewell. The premise reads, a Chinese family discover their grandmother has only a short while left to live and decide to keep her in the dark, scheduling a wedding to gather before she dies.
Yeah, good. It's been a couple hours since I've last cried.
87 Metascore, 7.4 IMDb. Awkwafina's broke out last year with Crazy Rich Asians and Ocean's 8. Now she's ready to carry a movie, and she was another darling at Sundance.
Yeah, she's the headliner here. It's listed as a comedy on IMDb. It's not listed as a drama.
Thank God.
It's not listed as a drama at all, which I thought was kind of interesting.
I read a lot of Big Sick comparisons, which is great.
Yeah, right? Sure. I'd love it. That was my highest rated movie of 2017. A24 got the distribution rights for around 6 to 7 million.
Never mind anything else I said. I'm sorry, but A24, they didn't really pump things last year.
No, they did. And that was according to the Wrap, not Deadline. My apologies. But A24, you wonder if they kind of missed the boat or if their FYC, their 4-year consideration
we're just
marketing
bitter
campaigns.
Because they
we
didn't
are.
Push Hereditary.
Of course we are. But that means something. Like the fact that they didn't pour any money into it means something. And wonder if that's going to be their plan going forward. The Wrap also says that this is going to be in Mandarin, or at least partly in Mandarin, as they say. So it's going to be interesting to see that pulled off. It's going to be interesting to see Awkwafina taking a dramatic turn and seeing she's getting great reviews so far, at least from the Sundance premiere. So I'm interested to see that for sure.
Yeah, that 87 Metascore sticks out to me. Late Night Mike. This is Emma Thompson's movie where she plays a late night talk show host. And for a plot premise, a late night talk show host suspects there's too many T's and C's in this, and then CTs suspects that she may soon
What's
be losing. She may soon be losing her long-running show.
I just found out that Emma Thompson and Annette Bening are different people. I knew that. I had never thought about them at the same time. We just had like a 20-minute break.
20-minute break.
Me confusing the two of them and Mike needing to basically break it down in a PowerPoint for me. So apparently this isn't Annette Bening.
Not Annette Bening.
I do have big hopes for this movie, though, and so does Amazon, obviously. Yep. They acquired the U.S. distribution rights for a record $13 million for this film, only to be released domestically.
Big money.
Yeah, so that doesn't even talk about the international rights. The Metascore concerns me a little. A 70 for something with that much money behind it and Amazon finding that much faith in it is a little perplexing, but the director, Nisha Kantara, has done a lot of quality, funny TV. She's done Shameless, The Last Man on Earth, Transparent, Mr. Robot, so I'm hoping this is a big hit. I love the late night scene, and that, again, I know I've talked about it on this show before, but The War for Late Night, that book about the behind the scenes happening and the power struggle between Conan O'Brien and Jay Leno, is one of the most fascinating books I've ever read, and there's all kinds of politics and power plays involved with late night drama, so I'm hoping this hits on it.
Next up on my Audible queue, by the way. I'm excited to read that. And bottom line is, they're not just buying Oscar movies. They're buying movies that they
Money
think
makers.
Will be
yep.
hits, too. Sure. So if this one's a hit, who knows?
Yep.
Clemency Mike stars Alfre Woodard. We reviewed a movie she was in, Love and Basketball, back in our basketball award show.
Sure did.
Those were dark days.
It was about a year ago almost.
That
coming
was,
up on the 1 year anniversary.
That was so much fun. Nobody
that was fun.
Nobody listened to it, but it was fun for us.
We should
us.
Just re-release it this year.
That would be a sick joke played on everybody. 7.1 IMDb audience, 75 Metascore, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes with 16 reviews. Premise reads, years of carrying out death row executions have taken a toll on prison warden Bernardine Williams. So another...
It's a fascinating plot premise.
Right.
Right? To hear about the psyche of a warden that actually keeps putting inmates to death, that's not something you would ever think about unless it was highlighting. It's one of those opportunities for the world of cinema to maybe put a spotlight on a problem that you would otherwise go by the wayside here.
post 9/11 torturers and now death row wardens.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Sundance was heavy. Another film, Honey Boy, 100% Rotten Tomatoes, 38 reviews, 75% audience score. Macon Monroe, Shia LaBeouf, and Lucas Hedges. The premise reads: a child actor works to mend the relationship with his hard-drinking, law-breaking father. So this is the Shia LaBeouf biopic.
Yeah.
And getting some great reviews so far.
That's what the early word is, and I'm definitely here for this. Apparently, it's Shia LaBeouf playing his own abusive father, and it's his retelling of his childhood growing up throughout his career and upbringing as a child star. Am I crazy for thinking this could course correct his whole career and bring him back to a new kind of movie star? Like, he's not going to be the action funny kid anymore. Maybe he does have dramatic chops left in him. And if this could explain away some of the oddity that we saw him go through in the public eye through his adolescence, I mean, doesn't that make a whole world, shine a whole new light on it at least?
He's a talent, bottom line. So, I mean, he's going to come out of it okay, as long as he's not abusing different substances and
right.
He's continues to get his reps. I mean, he's a talent. He's proven that already. I don't know. The PR stuff is too tough to handle for me. I mean, look at Bradley Cooper just recently.
Fair point.
How much has Bradley Cooper done wrong, really? He's just, you know, the tone of what he said aggravated people. So everybody could be like, well, you plagiarized a script and you did X, Y, and Z, but now you're trying to make us feel sorry for you. At the same time, people could think about it that way, too.
Well, America does love a redemption story, though. I wouldn't look past that. But it's also worth commenting, and this is yet another movie that Amazon snatched up at Sundance. And if you don't think they're sick of hearing how great Netflix did in this past Academy Award service and how Netflix is the streaming service to beat, look no further than Sundance. Forbes reported that Amazon spent $46 million on acquiring the distribution rights to certain films, including the aforementioned U.S. distribution rights record of $13 million for Late Night. They spent more than double the average investment that studios make at Sundance in acquiring films. That was fascinating to me, and Amazon is not playing around anymore, it seems like.
They're reading into those Sundance crossover stats. And you know what? I hope Shia LaBeouf comes back in a big way.
Same here. Same here. Absolutely.
I'm a fan. Loose, 93% on 14 reviews, starring Naomi Watts, Octavia Spencer, Tim Roth. Premise reads: a married couple is forced to reckon with their idealized image of their son, adopted from war-torn Eritrea. Good God. After an alarming discovery by a devoted high school teacher threatens his status as an all-star student. I just learned of another place that exists.
Yes, that's a country in Africa. I had to look up myself. So Neon Production Company, they're the ones that picked this up at Sundance. One of the few that didn't go to Amazon. They put out some interesting stuff. They kind of had their finger on the pulse of some recent, I would call maybe like festival darlings or cult classic type stuff or type films, I would say.
The buzz on this movie is great. And yeah. I can't wait to see this one. Honestly, I just learned of the country where it's from.
It sounds like it's like,
that's a me problem.
Tailor made for an Oscar, right? Naomi Watts, Octavia Spencer, Tim Roth is one of the supporting. It sounds like it's got its eye on some golden statues at the end of the 2019. So we'll see.
The Last Black Man in San Francisco. This is to be released June 14th. It won Dramatic Directing Award for Joe Talbot. Starring Jimmy Falls, Danny Glover, Mike Epps. The premise reads: a young man searches for home in the changing city that seems to have left him behind.
This seems like something that was done with a pretty low budget. Joe Talbot winning the Best Dramatic Directing Award at Sundance is no small feat. Past winners: Sarah Colangelo last year for The Kindergarten Teacher, which we reviewed in Oscar Sprint Profile. The two Daniels, Shiner and Kwan, for Swiss Army Man, won it a couple years prior to her. And of course, Robert Eggers for The Witch back in, I think it was 2011, 2012, something like that. So there have been some people that have made their name starting with that prestigious award. I'm excited to see what Joe Talbot has in store for The Last Black Man in San Francisco, and he's got a really solid cast attached to this as well.
What Danny Glover chooses to be in at this stage,
right,
where it's just all gravy, take note.
I agree.
The Souvenir, the premise reads: a young film student in the early 80s becomes romantically involved with a complicated and untrustworthy man. Starring Tilda Swinton as the mother. This is a 95 Metascore right now. 90% on Rotten Tomatoes with 29 reviews, Mike. This is the winner of a grand jury prize for Joanna Hogg, writer-director.
Indie Art House Film Festival Tilda Swinton is my favorite Tilda Swinton. So yes, I will be seeing this, and I'm very excited for it.
Super scary documentary alert. Where's Mr. Roy Cohn?
Could this be a more perfect day to talk about this type of movie?
80% on 5 reviews. Roy Cohn personified the dark arts of American politics, turning empty vessels into dangerous demigods. From McCarthy to Donald J. Trump, yada, yada, yada.
I would just like to point out that we are currently under the administration of a president who frequently asks in public for a Roy Cohn to step up. This is the type of person he wants. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, Roy Cohn was scary in a couple documentaries over the last few years. Roger Stone documentary, Studio 54, I've seen him. We've been seeing his face show up a lot, and he's a scary dude.
So to draw the parallel to this year, are we at this point with the Academy now? We commented all Oscar night long, and Clayton Davis had a big role in this too in the post-Oscar show. We did the interview there. There's a civil war brewing inside the Academy right now. Obviously, it's not that contentious. It's a figurative in nature, but you have the young Academy, very liberal-leaning, very open and inviting against the older Academy that likes to trend more towards the green books and some of those different types of the old standbys, the old Hollywood standbys. Are we getting to a point maybe in 2019 where something so flagrantly, this seems to be, liberal, will get recognition and will rule the day? RBG was nominated but didn't break through with a win. It's going to be interesting to see and keep your finger on the pulse of these political movies, whether they're documentary or fictitious, and just not only see if they get to Academy prominence, but also how biased and propaganda-y they become and turn out to be.
There's a lot of vowels right there.
I'm having such a hard time.
That's all right.
I should stop making up
words. I'm Italian. I like the vowels. Mike, Mr. Roy Cohn.
Cancel our Italian fans.
Where's Mr. Roy Cohn? It's probably a biodoc is what I'm guessing, kind of like a Roger Stone one, but maybe without his permission, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So bottom line is you're not going to get more than one usually. We saw that principle come into play this year with the Academy in the biggest way. You had RBG get it. You had Won't You Be My Neighbor not get it, even after the resume it had. So no matter what you're saying in terms of politics, my guess is you're going to get one biodoc tops if you get one. David Crosby, Remember My Name, is something I've heard a lot more buzz about.
Fair enough.
That's the next one on my list. 86 Metascore. The premise reads, meet David Crosby in this portrait of a man with everything but an easy retirement on his mind. Crosby still is a Nash dude, right?
Southern Cross is one of the greatest Southern rock songs of all time.
Knock Down the House, Mike. This is a documentary about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
So we see that same slant, but leaning into the subject matter as opposed to being diametrically opposed to it. That'll be interesting.
She is one of the subjects of this movie, a look at the people involved with various political campaigns during the 2018 U.S. congressional election, 100% on 9 reviews.
I am a huge fan of AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We are liberals here, you and I both are, so I don't think that's unfair or shocking to say. I will say, if you are a fan of AOC yourself, Jesus and Mero, the new Showtime show, it's an old Viceland show, an old YouTube show, and it's their first season on Showtime. They had their season premiere where she was on it, and she gave really an enlightening conversation. It was a really fun and insightful episode. If you're a fan of her politics and her work, I strongly recommend you go seek that out. It's available for free as the season premiere on YouTube. Definitely worthwhile, and I'm going to be very curious to see if this is about AOC's rise and certainly about her run up to her congressional seat, where she won the primary in a huge upset over a longstanding New York politician and then went on to win the district as well. I'm very, very interested to see not only how she is portrayed and her work ethic behind the scenes, but also just the general excitement surrounding her campaign, which from the national view seemed to be very prevalent and very present at all times.
Big Tim Adolescence. Another movie that loaded a lot of buzz. This was the Pete Davidson blonde-haired movie.
What we know about it.
Off the rails. Yeah, Machine Gun Kelly and John Cryer are also in this.
Is this the Pete Davidson biopic that him and...
I don't know if it's a biopic. The premise reads, a suburban teenager comes of age under the destructive guidance of his best friend, an aimless college dropout, who I guess is Pete Davidson. So...
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in, though. I like Pete Davidson. That's my...
I like Pete Davidson, too. I just wish he didn't look like he does all the drugs all the time.
He's had a tough life.
He's had a tough life, exactly. But you shouldn't do drugs, right? Nobody should bleach their hair blonde anymore, right?
Eminem should.
All right, group 3. These are the long time coming big movies that we've been waiting for a while from major directors. The first, of course, is The Irishman, directed by Martin Scorsese for Netflix. We just saw a teaser announcement, starring Al Pacino, and he plays Jimmy Hoffa. But you had the names Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Harvey Keitel. The movie also stars Anna Paquin, Jesse Plemons, and Ray Romano, amongst many. Premise reads, a mob hitman recalls his possible involvement with the slaying of Jimmy Hoffa.
I wonder how this is going to compare to the Danny DeVito 1992 movie Hoffa, where Jack Nicholson portrayed the character and had kind of a ubiquitous and ominous ending there.
That was an awesome politics movie.
Yeah, like it was.
That really roused a man from his seat.
It was a total union, you know, hurrah movie, big union support movie. That was really cool to see. So I wonder if we're going to get kind of the backdoor politics of this, or as the premise suggests, it's going to be strictly about the life and death, as Scorsese is so known for doing, gun-wielding baddies and mobsters. And I imagine if I had to put money on it, I would put money on the latter there, knowing that it's Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, you would think this gets nominated at the end of the day, because 13 out of Scorsese's last 15 directed narrative films have been nominated for Oscars. This is going back to 1986. Bringing Out the Dead.
Mike's going to try to remember these all off the top of his head. I'm going to open up IMDb and check them. Go ahead.
No, Bringing Out the Dead and Shutter Island are the only two that were not nominated. I remember the two that weren't nominated.
So I know people don't want to think about this either, and Lord knows we as cinephiles and big Martin Scorsese fans certainly don't, but yeah, this is going to get nominated, because how many of these do you think we have left from Martin Scorsese? I mean, this one alone took, 3-4 years in production to get done? And we're not even done yet?
I'm a little worried, though, because this film has gone way over budget.
Oh, yeah.
It's now up to around $200 million for a film with De Niro and Pacino and Pesci and Keitel, who are long past their movie star days.
Maybe.
They kind of are. When's the last hit movie De Niro's been in? Hit movie Pacino's been
Bad
in.
Bad Grandpa.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Joe Pesci, they have not had a hit movie.
No, it's a good point.
In a decade. But none of them.
If you were going to wager that one, you know, what director can get one more legendary Pacino performance, one more legendary De Niro? I mean, these guys are going to show up for Martin Scorsese, right? And Scorsese, knowing them as well as he does and working with them as many times, is going to be the guy that will put them in the positions to maximize their strengths.
So you wonder if Netflix doesn't care at the end of the day. They just know all of their... They just know...
Like Bird Box got 45 million views.
Yeah, most of their subscribers are going to click on this. Yeah. And they're going to be happy.
I think that they don't care if this is awards fodder. I think it will be, for what it's worth. And for Christ's sake, I think it has to be, too. Because, like you said, 4 years, many hundred millions over budget and been so hyped up. I think even if it's kind of a letdown, it's still going to get, like, a screenplay nom at the end of the day, just out of respect for the property and the people involved.
Steve Zalian, I mean, a good screenwriter there, too.
So you have to be excited for this, right? Amongst your speculation.
I'm excited, but I'm worried because it kept getting pushed. We thought this was going to be something that we reviewed this past year, that was going to be nominated for this past
year.
Clayton
Davis had it last year in his looking 2018, ahead at the 2018 awards. He had it in his best picture top 10, yeah.
We had it up there, too.
Yeah, we did,
were talking
certainly.
About it. So bottom line is, this movie has some warning signs or red flags involved with it. And for that level of money to be put into a Robert De Niro Pacino movie at this day and age is strange.
Well, that's what past Hollywood is doing. So let's talk about current and present big name Hollywood. The other huge name of the big ones coming out this year. That's not Disney, I guess.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, written and directed by Quentin Tarantino. The release date for this is July 26th. Michael, Margot Robbie is Sharon Tate. You have Leonardo DiCaprio. That's enough right there, correct? You also have Brad Pitt, Rumor Willis, Bruce's daughter, Dancing with the Stars fame. Al Pacino's in this baby, too.
Can't lose.
Timothy Olyphant.
Love him.
Margaret Qualley.
Love her.
She was in The Nice Guys, Mike, and she was really good in that.
Yes,
the Girl
she
in
was.
Yellow. James Marsden.
Love him, too.
Scoot McNairy, recently on True Detective.
I love how you're 8 or 9 names down, and you're going to just read off now.
Kurt Russell. Santa. Victoria Pedretti. I think she's got a big role, but she's a newcomer. You have Emile Hirsch. Damian Lewis from Billions.
Yep.
Bruce Dern, Nebraska. And everything. And of course, Lena Dunham is in there somewhere. I mean, that cast has to be the most lauded that we've ever had, right?
It's such a look. It's such a snapshot in time to see these two movies kind of being produced at the same time frame. And it is just the juxtaposition of where Hollywood started, or like the golden age of Hollywood in the 60s and 70s, and the Scorsese productions and his whole group that kind of rioting and dying with him. Obviously, Pacino playing both roles is cute, but being in both productions, I should say. And then there's the Tarantino, that mid-90s, that uprising of kind of new cinema and wacky, crazy, borrowing from Japan's almost, and the violence and bloodshed and gore and that martial arts infused type of cinema. I don't know if this is going to have that in that. This sounds like it's just going to be one of Tarantino's, dare I say, more mainstream productions, which we haven't really seen from him in a while. I don't even know if you can call The Hateful Eight a mainstream production.
I don't know. I think he's gone a little more mainstream over the years, the last few productions, I would say. I don't know if the... Django's big. The Kill Bills are big. I would say that this one is, in terms of cast, one of his best and biggest yet. Yet, like you said, the premise reads, a faded TV actor and a stunt double strive to achieve fame and success in the film industry during the final years of Hollywood's golden age in 1969 Los Angeles. I think the faded TV actor and stunt double is like Brad Pitt and Leo.
Yeah, that fits.
Isn't that crazy? Like, the one's a stunt double, and they're both movie stars? That's kind of wild to think about. But you have the Manson family angle in here with Sharon Tate.
Well, that, do you? Involved. I mean, you go down his list. Charles Manson isn't listed until, like, way down. Damon Harriman's supposed to be playing him. Sharon Tate is one of the mainstream people. I wonder if he's going to pull, like, a Psycho and have, because Sharon Tate's being played by Margot Robbie, I wonder if Margot Robbie's going to be, have her fate, which she obviously was murdered by the Manson family in a horrific fashion back in the 70s. If that's going to be early in the film, I don't know how he's going to do it. What the focus of this film is at all, I don't
Quentin know. Quentin Tarantino has rewritten history in the past. He may have true. The That's Manson true. Family storm in, and then Margot Robbie...
Brad Pitt
Robbie,
meets him, yeah.
Right. Margot Robbie just knifes them all.
That's a good point. You know what? I didn't think
of that. Hell knows.
Yeah, that'd be something.
Another long time coming is the adaptation, finally, Mike, for you at least, of the best-selling novel, The Goldfinch, which is Mike's favorite book.
Yes. No, because I read.
I almost read this book like 17 times, but I know it's been in, you know, circulation for a while. It's a longtime bestseller. You have Nicole Kidman, Sarah Paulson from American Horror Story, Dunkirk's Finn Wolfhard, Luke Wilson, Westworld's Jeffrey Wright, and a buzzed about performance thus far from Baby Driver's Ansel Elgort. This is getting a primetime Oscar release.
Took the words out of my mouth.
October 11th. A boy in New York is taken in by a wealthy Upper East Side family after his mother is killed in a bombing at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Well, you have that the kind of family tragedy angle in there. You got the drama in there. You certainly have Nicole Kidman is just being showered in gold and everything she does
everything
lately.
Everything she does.
Yeah, this sounds like a big one. I don't know if it's me or if it's because we have Scorsese and Tarantino who happen to be releasing films in the same year or what it is. But to me, I feel more excited about 2019 on the onset than I did about 2018 on the onset. I don't know what the reason for that is, if the blockbusters are just more appealing or if I just have more hope or if I was just let down enough in 2018, even though it was a relatively deep year for cinema. But that's just how I feel, and this is going to play a role into it, this movie, The Goldfinch.
I'm shocked that you actually went with that and you now are crazed by The Goldfinch. And we're all going to get audiobooks tomorrow. No, I'm surprised you had the fire for that one. There we go.
I like them all. I do. I'm at least intrigued enough by every movie on this list to want to see it.
Yes. Group four, these are from recently nominated big names,
yes,
I would say. So Little Women is the first of this group. Written and directed by Lady Bird's Greta Gerwig, starring Florence Pugh, Timothy Chalamet, Saoirse Ronan, Emma Watson from Harry Potter, and such. Bob Odenkirk, recently in The Post, and of course, Better Call Saul. Laura Dern.
The Dern family staying in business.
Big Little Lies and The Tale. Chris Cooper coming back from American Beauty. He was the dad, the bad dad in that movie. just to throw her in, and Meryl Streep.
She was probably not busy that day. It's got a Christmas release. The plot premise, four sisters coming of age in America in the aftermath of the Civil War. It's obviously, this movie has been done a couple times. Studio pictures that have aimed for a Christmas Day release and are supposed to be positioned to be like Oscar pictures or awards fodder, they've not done well recently, and they've kind of been passed by. I mean, All the Money in the World, Downsizing, Welcome to Marwen, all in the last 2 years were supposed to be Christmas releases that were had these big momentums for award season behind them, and they all, for one reason or another, whether it was in their control or not, kind of faltered.
Yeah, you're going to see a bunch of movies that we talk about later, Star Wars Episode 9 in the mix there, that come out on the 20th, and a few, maybe one or two more that come out on the 25th. Yes, this could be some counter-programming, but I would think, like, during football season, like, during the rest of the year, or especially the rest of fall, this movie would play much better in the lead-up to Christmas season rather than during the Christmas
break.
Yeah,
I would co-sign that idea, and that's a little peculiar for me that it's coming out, it's being chosen for that Christmas release. That said, as a movie fan...
Movie's going to make $400 million.
Well, yeah, as a movie fan, my excitement to see Greta Gerwig back in our lives with this cast far outweighs my skepticism and worry about that release date, and obviously, Welcome to Marwen has nothing to do with this picture, quite obviously, so I'm very, very excited for this one. I do hope it lives up to its billing.
We previewed this one a couple times, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. This is directed by, Can You Ever Forgive Me's Marielle Heller. Tom Hanks is Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers himself. Also starring Susan Kelechi Watson, Matthew Reese from The Americans yet again there. And look who it is, Chris Cooper, that bad dad from American Beauty, bad in quotes. Is this too close to Won't You Be My Neighbor to get the actual narrative version?
If it was coming out now, but I think we got another 8 months until it does. It's not coming out till Thanksgiving week.
When, I don't remember the last time this has worked, because they tried this with Man on Wire. Case Against Eight is now getting a movie by Marielle Heller,
too. This isn't Man on Wire. This is Mr. Rogers.
Okay.
The best Tom Hanks. The best actor race is over.
It's
if
over.
If this movie comes out in 2019, the best actor race is
what
over.
What if he's just, like, terrible in it? What if he's terrible?
What, like, just as a troll to everyone else that's expecting him to be phenomenal, he just tanks it purposefully?
He's just bad. He just can't even put on a sweater. He's just a luscious...
Goddamn kids! That would
I'm
be a
sure
take.
He's going to be good. He's skinny. He got skinny. He looks exactly like Fred.
He does. He's got. Crazy. Didn't he say... I thought I read something. I can't remember. I thought I read something that said he got down to like 135 pounds or something.
He got down there. Which is amazing. For sure. The Last Thing He Wanted. This is written and directed by Dee Rees of Mudbound fame, Bessie, etc., etc. Premise reads, a journalist quits her newspaper job and becomes an arms dealer for a covert government agency.
Hollywood keeps making the same movies.
Starring Anne Hathaway, Ben Affleck, Willem Dafoe, Toby Jones, and Rosie Perez.
Oscar-nominated Dee Rees obviously did her work in Mudbound, and this is going to be another adaptation. This time it's from a Joan Didion screenplay, who also just had her screenplay of A Star Is Born adapted this past year by Bradley Cooper. So, interested to see this. You would think with those names alone, Joan Didion, Dee Rees attached to it, Anne Hathaway is another Academy darling. She survived her backlash, at least, because at one point she was, and then she wasn't. Now I think she's kind of ingratiated herself again.
And Willem Dafoe's trying to get the supporting actor nod somewhere.
3 years in a row? He could be the Buffalo Bills, maybe?
He's got another one coming up, too. But, yeah, I mean, Dee Rees, we'd watch anything she does
of
at
course.
This point.
Awesome.
The fact that she's working with Hathaway. And let's see Ben Affleck do something good again. That'd be cool. You know, I've been worried about him.
He's another one that's kind of had that pendulum lately of...
I just thought he crossed the point of no return where he wasn't going to do bad shit anymore. And then he did the Batman stuff. Like, after Argo, I was like, this guy is going to be a superstar director.
Yeah, I thought the same.
He made going through airport security the most suspenseful thing I ever saw.
And then he got a back tattoo.
Boy, did he ever get a back tattoo, Mike. Gemini Man. This is directed by Ang Lee.
This wins the award for movie I am most concerned of on this list.
Really? Yeah. Release date is October 4th. Starring Will Smith, Mary Elizabeth Winston, Clive Owen, and Doctor Strange's Benedict Wong.
Fantastic cast.
Action sci-fi drama. Premise reads, an over-the-hill hitman faces off against a younger clone of himself.
Okay, two reasons I'm worried about this. One, If you go online and type in Gemini Man, there's a couple YouTube trailers, and it's really funny because if you click on the trailer to hit play, it's just Will Smith complaining about the bugs in Georgia where they're filming Gemini Man and wearing a net over his face so they don't bother him.
Really?
Yeah, that was funny. Two, there's no clone of anyone that I could see on the cast list. You would think with Will Smith being the lead, he's going to be the hitman that has a clone, right? So they're going to CGI, or is he going to play two parts? Or they'd have to be CGI if it's a younger version of himself. So they're going to rely on Will Smith facing off against young CGI'd Will Smith, kind of like Schwarzenegger did in one of the Terminators.
What if he's just fighting the genie from Aladdin?
Oh, good God! They do this, the final scene where somebody's got the gun and is pointing at both of them, and it's like regular Will Smith and genie Will Smith, and you're like, who is who? Who's the real one?
Well, at least, you know, Ang Lee's done really awesome with giant, colorful CGI characters before, right? Look, Ang Lee typically makes good movies, so the fact
that he does.
Has taken a long time with this one to come back. We love Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yes, we do.
It'd be nice to see Will Smith get back on track.
Yes, it would.
If Ben Affleck and Will Smith get back on track this year, wouldn't that be cool?
Imagine if they recast Ben Affleck as Aladdin for that movie, just to get them both back on track in the same picture.
That would be upsetting. That would be very upsetting. Maybe Jafar. Like, if we had, like, Jafar looked ridiculous.
They cast Ben Affleck as Aladdin and his back tattoo as
Jafar. Why isn't Emma Stone Jafar? Because she looked like Jafar on the red carpet.
That would have been awesome.
That dress. That would be awesome. Perfect. Just wear the dress from the Oscars as the nemesis in Aladdin, something distinct, and that would work.
Although you'd be totally whitewashing the role of Aladdin Jafar there. Right. So
again,
all right,
problem. The Woman in the Window, this is directed by Joe Wright,
yes.
Darkest Hour, Atonement fame there. He's never made bad movies, really. He's almost guaranteed to make a strong one, at least. Premise reads, an agoraphobic woman living alone in New York begins spying on her new neighbors only to witness a disturbing act of violence. Starring Amy Adams.
This could be it.
Is this finally it?
This could be it.
Wyatt Russell's in there, though, too, so probably not it.
Well, look at the next name.
Gary Oldman's in there. Yes.
No, and Julianne Moore.
I'm giving Wyatt Russell a hard time. He's good in almost everything. I loved him in the Richard Linklaters, Everybody Wants Some. He was not so good in Overlord. That's my only thing. But yeah, you have Gary Oldman, and the list goes on and on, Mike.
Yeah.
Julianne Moore, Brian Tyree Henry, Anthony Mackie.
That might be my favorite cast list of these films we've done. I thought this was basically just a retelling of Rear Window by Hitchcock, but it's actually based on a novel that was a New York Times bestseller. So I guess it's not, but it really sounds similar.
We're adapting some major bestsellers this year, and that didn't work so well for Emily Blunt, Girl on the Train.
Right.
So who knows? Like, these have missed before, but typically Joe Wright doesn't really miss.
It also has a Prime Award season kickoff slot going the first week of October is when it's supposed to debut. That's the same area that A Star is Born was kind of in. And
definitely.
It had all that momentum and word of mouth leading up to its U.S. debut. So could be in a good spot here. Could finally be Amy Adams' time.
Fingers crossed.
Said for the seventh year.
Ford versus Ferrari, directed by James Mangold from Logan and Walk the Line, etc., etc. Three Tandy Humor, starring John Bernthal and Christian Bale.
Another great cast.
Also starring Matt Damon, Outlander's Catriona Balfe, Josh Lucas, douchebag and everything, but one that we like. He plays a good douchebag. And of course, Tracy Letts, who took a year off to film all the movies that has coming out this year, probably to write another 15 plays, I guess. But release date, November 15th. This premise reads, the true story of the battle between Ford and Ferrari to win Le Mans in 1966.
We'd hit on this one then during the bio of Vice, or during the Best Actor category review, one of the two, talking about Christian Bale's next chance. If he does fall short in his portrayal of Dick Cheney to procure the Oscar, he obviously lost out there to Rami Malek, so maybe this is going to be Christian Bale and Amy Adams back at it, baby!
They could be right back here. I mean, this looks like a piece that, I mean, it's, you know, a biopic type of thing. True historical, where they're playing these real characters that, you know, old cars.
I can't wait to make our predictions next episode. I'm getting all revved up.
Mike, The Lighthouse.
A little car humor for you, getting revved up, no big deal.
That's good.
Ford versus Ferrari.
That's good. The Lighthouse.
What is a transmission?
Stars Willem Dafoe. This is intriguing to me, because I don't know what the hell it's about. written and directed by the Vitches, the witches, Robert Eggers. This also stars Robert Pattinson. And the premise reads, very vaguely, the story of an aging lighthouse keeper named Old, who lives in the early 20th century Maine. Oh my God.
So this sounds like the most boring premise ever, and then you just told me.
Go ahead. Drama, fantasy, horror.
Yeah.
You pitched Pirates of the Caribbean, I pitched Aquaman. This could be anything. Robert Eggers is a whack job who we love.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
All right.
Robert Pattinson. Yesterday, Mike, is directed by Slumdog Millionaire's Danny Boyle.
This got a lot of love when the trailer dropped recently.
Yeah, starring Darkest Hour's Lily James, Ed Sheeran himself.
That is every need we need.
Pop star Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
Late Night Talk Show hopes James Corden. Blade Runner 2049's Ana de Armas and SNL's Kate McKinnon.
This sounds like people just fucking threw darts at a Hollywood dartboard and it's they took the first cast. Five names. Yeah.
My God. A struggling musician realizes he's the only person on earth who can remember the Beatles.
Yeah. So like I said, this had a big moment because the trailer just dropped and it's an interesting premise. It's not a typical Danny Boyle looking film at all. It's based around the songs of the Beatles. He like the protagonist gets bumped in the head or falls off and gets a coma or something. And then he wakes up in a world where the Beatles never exist. So he does the old Back to the Future sports betting type hook where he just writes all the Beatles songs and performs them and gains instant superstardom from them because the world has never heard of the Beatles. So it's an interesting premise, but it's an out there premise. It's like a weird type. Not something I would have thought Danny Boyle would do, but
and not something that you would think winds up being Oscar-y at
right,
the end of the day,
right? But a lot of people were excited for it, for the trailer anyway.
Also, who's the Beatles? My Queen and Slim, supposedly a major acting vehicle for Daniel Kaluuya. This is directed by Melina Matsoukas, also starring Jodie Turner-Smith and Bokeem Woodbine. We've been waiting for the Bokeem Woodbine breakout.
Yeah.
He was in the MCU. He's been on some great stuff on TV. Yeah, I think he's a better actor than what he's given credit for. Premise reads, a couple's first date takes an unexpected turn when a police officer pulls them over. This is a release date of November 22nd. That is prime time for Oscar campaigns. Queen and Slim, Daniel Kaluuya get on a lot of people's lists for best actor so far.
Melina Matsoukas, the director of that, she's done a lot of with that HBO series Insecure, which gets a high marks from a lot of critics out there.
Yeah.
Look, anything Daniel Kaluuya does, we're going to see and we're going to advocate for. So I'm really hopeful that this gets him back into that best actor conversation.
The big hitters keep on coming here, Mike. The Laundromat, directed by Steven Soderbergh. Who's not retired,
God.
Not at least three movies in
look at this cast
2 years. Gary Oldman, Meryl Streep, David Schwimmer from Friends, Matthew Schoenaerts from all the Danish movies I love, Jeffrey Wright, Will Forte, and Antonio Banderas. And Schoenaerts is also in a lot of French movies I love too. Premise reads, follows a group of journalists who take part in unearthing 11.5 million files linking the world's most powerful political figures to secret banking accounts to avoid taxes.
Yeah, this is about the Panama Papers, that whole incident that came to light a couple years ago where it seemed like every rich person in America was, you know, breaking financial rules, but that's no big deal, right? It's got a low 6.2 IMDb right now, which is cause for concern. Scott Z. Burns is credited with the screenplay here as well, so he's had a busy couple years here preparing these. Soderbergh's been on weird waves lately, right? Unsane kind of never really found its footing, never really got traction. We liked it.
We did.
High Flying Bird, we both saw as kind of not great. A lot of people did like it, you're right. So, and how can you not be intrigued by just the cast that includes Gary Oldman and Meryl Streep? Again, you think it's probably going to have that liberal slant on it, so that may be ruffling feathers?
Perhaps, yeah. And it might be, you might be getting the bots attacking another could audience
be
all, score.
Could be another case, yeah.
But I don't know. We'll
it's a out. Netflix release, so we're going to find out soon enough.
Going to rip a few off quickly here to finish out this group. We have Boyhood's Richard Linklater. He has Where'd You Go, Bernadette, starring Cate Blanchett and Kristen Wiig, coming out August 9th. There's a trailer out there for that, which doesn't look great.
Nope. But
I trust Richard Linklater. He's a good filmmaker.
I'm glad you do.
Jim Jarmusch, works with Adam Driver again in The Dead Don't Die.
I disagree. I've seen dead people.
With Steve Buscemi and Chloe Sevigny. Bill Condon from Gods and Monsters and writer of Chicago. He directs Helen Mirren and Ian McKellen in a con artist story called The Good Liar, coming out November 15th.
I will see anything that Helen Mirren ever does.
Pedro Almodovar has a new film this year called Pain and Glory, starring, you know, fittingly, Penelope Cruz and Antonio Banderas. So this is like a culmination for him. Cruz has done a bunch of movies with him, and Banderas has done a bunch of movies with him. Now we got them both together in a new Almodovar film. I'm mispronouncing the name, but I love him anyway. March 22nd in Spain. This is getting released, so we should hear some buzz pretty soon about this one.
Penelope Cruz has been working her butt off lately.
Absolutely. American Beauty and James Bond director Sam Mendes has a World War I movie coming out called 1917. Not a lot of details on that.
Yeah, I don't think this one's going to come out in 2019. I think it's going to get pushed back.
The Kitchen stars Melissa McCarthy, Tiffany Haddish, Elizabeth Moss, etc. This is about 1970s gangsters' wives who keep up the rackets after their husbands are all locked up. This is coming out August 9th.
Done by one of the writers of both World Trade Center and Straight Outta Compton, the director here, Andrea Burloff. Is this going to be what we wanted Widows to be? Does this sound pretty intriguing? Am I alone here in thinking that?
Could be funny too with McCarthy and Haddish.
Yeah.
And then you have Elizabeth Moss. When she had done anything bad lately?
Listed as action, crime, and drama on IMDb. It's got an August release, so that usually does signify, you know, The Spy Who Dumped Me, Super Bad, that kind of release thing. So
okay.
Maybe it's not Oscar fodder, but yeah, it could be a box office hit.
Group 5 is the potential Oscar breakout. So we just heard Clayton Davis tout Harriet, the Harriet Tubman story.
Mm-hmm.
This stars Cynthia Erivo. Of course, the premise reads, based on the story of iconic freedom fighter Harriet Tubman, her escape from slavery and subsequent missions to free dozens of slaves through the Underground Railroad in the face of growing pre-Civil War adversity. Also starring the favorites Joe Alwyn, Hidden Figures, Janelle Monáe, and Three Billboards, Clark Peters, co-written and directed by Casey Lemons. This screams awards worthy with every still I look at.
Credit to Mr. Award Circuit himself, Clayton Davis. He was on this early, and I don't see why this wouldn't be a Oscar type contender when the day comes for it. Wikipedia suggests it's a fall 2019 release, which is always a bit speculative. You never like to see something that's supposed to come out late in the year without a firm release date. So again, maybe this gets pushed off, but if it doesn't and it comes out in 2019, I think we do have a contender, and all credit, like I said, to Clayton Davis for that one.
So Lemons was an actress for much of her career.
Yes.
She was the roommate of Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs that
yes.
we reviewed not too long ago. She's also the director of Eve's Bayou, which I watched for a 1997 retrospective that we did one of our first podcasts. She's a talent. I was wondering, like, why the hell hasn't she directed a million things up till now? I mean, her filmography, it just has humongous gaps in it, Mike. She has this in 2019. She did a Luke Cage episode last year. 2017, she did one episode of TV, Shots Fired. Black Nativity in 2013. Talk to Me, 2007. Caveman's Valentine, 2001. Eve's Bayou, 97. Every 4-6 years. I guess it's relatively consistent.
Yeah, it's the pickup, though, because she really hasn't done much as an actor either. If you look at her acting credits, yeah. She's did, you know, 98, working throughout the 90s, and then 2002, 06, and 2012, and that's it. So she's kind of been concentrating on a director career. Again, I'm very excited for this one. And I don't know, I mean, hearing Clayton Davis's take on it, hearing how excited he was, obviously instilled more excitement in me than I would have on my own. But if she pulls through and could be the first black female director to win, the first black director, period, to win the Best Director category here, the Best Director Academy Award, that'd be obviously history-making. It'd be a big deal.
The stills are intense and
yeah.
impressive. And Cynthia Erivo, it's about time for her to really break out. She busted through the door last year.
Agree.
With Bad Times at the El Royale, with Widows, with that outfit at the BAFTAs, my God.
Agree.
And why not her this year? The Rhythm Section, starring Blake Lively, Jude Law, and Sterling K. Brown. The release date is November 22nd. A woman seeks revenge against those who orchestrated a plane crash that killed her family.
This is another one that Clayton Davis kind of hit on and suggested. I want to, in his article, I want to just highlight that. AwardsCircuit.com. He had his article released a couple days ago when you're listening to this, February 26th, his way too early Oscars prediction that he does every year and has kind of served as an inspiration for us doing these year in preview episodes and look ahead Oscar ballots that we do here. Again, we interviewed him just a couple days ago as well as for the fallout of the Academy Awards. Definitely go listen to that. But this was one he wrote about in his article that you can go find on AwardsCircuit.com. He highlighted it. We're getting to a point where Blake Lively is like towing her serious dramatic chops and maybe fringing on Oscar territory. This could be the one to push it over the top.
She was so good last year in A Simple Favor. Yeah. My God, what a character that was. But Reed Morano, she's been directing a lot of things I like. Episodes of Halt and Catch Fire, Billions, Handmaid's Tale. I Think We're Alone Now wasn't too bad with the Peter Dinklage and one of the Fannings. That was okay.
Yeah, I didn't see that movie.
And The Rhythm Section now being her second feature film, maybe she's gotten the hang of it and really knocks it out of the park. This could be. This one's fascinating, Mike.
Yeah.
Midsommar.
Yeah.
Written and directed by Ari Aster of Hereditary fame, his second film, and also for A24. Stars Florence Pugh, Fighting With My Family, Lady Macbeth last year. She's in a ton of things this year. Starring Florence Pugh, who's been in everything, like I just said, and Will Poulter, goes all the way back to We're the Millers, where he was funny, and then where he was the scariest person ever created in Detroit. This could be anything, Mike.
It's Ari Aster. We saw what Hereditary was. That was his first film, so imagine him getting his feet wet and being used to being on set already as a director. Yeah, looking forward to it.
August 9th release date. Also stars William Jackson Harper of The Good Place. Premise reads, a young woman reluctantly joins her boyfriend on a summer trip where things quickly go awry.
I have a feeling,
hail somebody.
Yeah, I have a feeling you could use that for any movie Ari Aster directs. Things go awry.
I can't wait.
Yeah, me either.
The Personal History of David Copperfield.
Another one that sounds bizarre.
Directed and co-written by Veep's Armando Iannucci in The Loop, Death of Stalin, starring Game of Thrones, Brienne of Tarth, Gwendolyn Christie, Tilda Swinton, Mary Poppins Returns, Ben Whishaw, Mike's favorite actor, House's Hugh Laurie, again, Doctor Strange's Benedict Wong, and a buzzed about performance already from Lion and Slumdog Millionaire's Dev Patel. This is, of course, based on the novel by Charles Dickens. This is Iannucci's Dickens.
Yeah, I have no idea what to expect from this, to be honest.
How many F-bombs can he drop in a Dickens adaptation?
This is going to be something special, I think. I'm very excited about the next one, though.
Knives Out, written and directed by Brick Looper and The Last Jedi's helmer, Rian Johnson, starring Ana de Armas, Daniel Craig, Chris Evans, Toni Collette.
Come back to me.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes.
Michael Shannon, Lakeith Stanfield, Christopher Plummer, and Don Johnson. Mike.
And one of them did it.
Mike, can you put together a better cast? I mean,
For
us. Like Blade Runner 2049, Ana de Armas, she was like one of my favorite performances in that year. Chris Evans.
James Bond, Captain America, the Hereditary mom, the Halloween mom,
grandma. Sorry to Bother You standout. Yeah. Keith Stanfield, Michael Shannon, who I hope is a good guy and not a bad guy. Can you imagine? But he's probably
he's going to be the guy that we're supposed to think did it throughout the movie. And it turns out he was just a passerby or something.
And then, but he actually did it.
Well, the reason we say this is because it's called a whodunit. It's said it's in its description. It's classic whodunit style. Rian Johnson, we're both big fans of. We loved The Last Jedi. We had a two-part review on it, and we thought it should have been gotten more awards recognition than it did. And we know we're in the minority, or maybe at least the 50-50 split there.
The Brothers Bloom is a movie I only saw once, but that's the only film. Like, even that film I liked. He's never done a bad movie,
right,
in my opinion.
Looper, so, we're very high on. Brick, we're very high on.
He's also writing a Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah.
This guy is a phenom. This one comes out November 27th.
That's Oscar season, so maybe. We'll see what the studio thinks of that. We'll see if it gets moved around, but I'm very, very excited for that.
Mike, possible breakout for Rebecca Hall, future Mrs. Mike One.
I love her. I love her so much. She's so talented.
Keep dreaming. She's from Frost Nixon, of course, Iron Man 3. We've reviewed her a million times. She is such a great actress, but she has written and directed this film called Passing, starring Tessa Thompson, Ruth Negga, premise reads, Passing follows the unexpected reunion of two high school friends whose renewed acquaintance ignites a mutual obsession that threatens both of their carefully constructed realities. Whoa. Adaptation of a novel.
Rebecca Hall's got some darkness in her, which is why I love her. I think all her performances always border on that, like, harrowing presentation, whether or not her character, she always brings that to her character, so I'm very excited to see it brought to her writing style as well.
I thought she was great in The Awakening. I still can't get up the gumption to watch Christine.
Christine was phenomenal.
I know.
It was so depressing.
I can't do it. Lucy in the Sky, this is directed by Fargo TV series, you know, Emmy nominee Noah Hawley, starring Zazie Beetz, Natalie Portman and John Hamm. Premise reads, the story of a female astronaut who, upon returning to Earth from a life-changing mission in space, begins to slowly unravel and lose touch with reality.
Yeah. Asthenia is a song by Blink-182 that describes, the word asthenia describes that feeling of being out in space so long and not wanting to come home and being lost like an astronaut. So
makes sense.
That's all I have.
Well, is she going to go into the shimmer? Perhaps.
Should I go back? Should I go back? Should I? I feel alone and tired.
I can't believe you you have a recall for lyrics.
Last night it came as a picture with a good reason, a warning sign.
I don't understand how you can recall lyrics in a podcast format because it's two different things. Like, I guess is it all left brain?
I feel alone and tired. Should I go back? Let's move on.
Nobody knows what song that is, but except for you and all the 2000 babies. The Truth stars Juliette Binoche, Catherine Deneuve, Ethan Hawke, and Ludovine Sagnier. Why is that a potential breakout? Because director Hirokazu Koreeda needs to break out sooner than later, Mike. We have The King starring Timothy Chalamet, Ben Mendelsohn, and Joel Edgerton. They all act in Animal Kingdom's director David Mikod's Middle Ages film.
Chalamet gonna dominate the Middle Ages.
They're all in battle attire in the one still that I saw. Extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile could be a breakout for Zac Efron playing Ted Bundy.
Give me every 70s serial killer on screen this year in 2019.
Lily Collins also stars. This is coming to Netflix. Bergman Island. This fascinates me. Mia Wasikowska, Vicky Krapes, and Anders Danielsen Lee from 22 July this year. Vicky Krapes, of course, from Phantom Thread. Great actresses, an actor there. This is about a couple of filmmakers visiting the island that inspired Ingmar Bergman's work.
It's fascinating.
Group 6, Mike. These are more blockbusters. Ripped through them relatively quick. Cats is coming back.
Yeah.
Directed by The King's Speech. Director Tom Hooper.
So that's at least going to get an original song nominee, right?
Something. Starring Rebel Wilson, Idris Elba, Dame Judi Dench. Got to be nominated. December 20th released. Do I have to read the premise? No, I don't.
It's about cats.
Rocket Man. This is the Elton John story starring
Very high on this.
Taron Egerton is like a phenom as a singer because it's basically Bohemian Rhapsody. It has the same guy that took over Bohemian Rhapsody, Dexter Fletcher, directing this one. Bryce Dallas Howard, Richard Madden also star. So it looks like you're getting one musical sequence after another, but it's Taron Egerton really singing
actually
like
his
John.
Voice.
And Elton John is just like giving him all the praise in the world these days. And everything you see Taron Egerton doing, he's just singing his butt off all the promos and stuff.
I mean, it could be a victim, I don't know, not a victim, but a pundit of perfect timing too, because we just saw this blueprint lead to Oscar's gold and come to fruition in a movie where the actor didn't use solo his voice, you know, and it was shared. So maybe Taron Egerton's going to follow right in Remy Malek's footsteps, or maybe it could be poor timing because the Academy just rewarded this type of performance. We're going to see if it rises to the level of Oscar consideration at all once it comes out May 31st.
Also, Mom's Best Picture for Best Picture is Downton Abbey, which comes out September 20th.
All right.
And I hope the big, doofy Earl dies. Sorry, Mom, but I hope he dies. Finally! I need him to die. Star Wars Episode 9, release date is December 20th. Like I said, we have Little Women coming out on Christmas. We have Star Wars Episode 9 dominating things on December 20th. Who knows what will happen there, but I guess you got some counter-programming. We have Brad Pitt and Tommy Lee Jones's starring vehicle in James Gray's astronaut sci-fi film, Ad Astra. This was supposed to come out last year.
Yeah.
It's coming out this May.
There was a rumor about a screening that was for a well-known sci-fi picture that was supposed to go live that didn't. The screening got canceled because the film is such a mess. Okay. And a lot of people are assuming, there's no evidence, there's been no one to say that is Ad Astra, but the prevailing thought was that it was Ad Astra. Uh-oh. So that film may be a mess if it was that. I'm not saying it was, there's no evidence to prove it was.
James Gray has done good movies before. Ad Astra is coming out on May 24th. We have Aladdin also coming out on May 24th. The Lion King is coming out July 19th. We have Spider-Man Far From Home.
Spider-Man.
You're just losing your mind, aren't you? July 5th. We've previewed these movies a bunch of times already. Frozen 2.
Let it go!
November 22nd.
You get it.
I was going to do it, you son of a bitch.
Fuck you. Stop. You don't get to do all the impressions. Getting an apple, eating it.
Toy Story 4, that's June 21st. And then, of course, we have the Addams Family animated version. That's a great job. October 18th. The last of these potential blockbusters that could be Oscar movies is Sopranos prequel. My God, that's a mouthful. Sopranos prequel, The Many Saints of Newark. This stars John Bernthal, Vera Farmiga. Of course, it's written by David Chase.
The fact that David Chase is involved gives me hope, but I'm very worried about this product in a vacuum.
Directed by longtime HBO guy, Game of Thrones, of course, The Sopranos, Alan Taylor, who also did one of the Thor movies. So that is your Pictures Part 1.
That's the Part 1. That's the Pictures portion of 2019.
Pictures portion of all the profiles.
And we will be doing Oscar Sprint Profiles. If last year's any indication, we did about 50 films between Oscar Sprint Profiles and movie events where we actually previewed them, gave you 2-for-1 reviews in every episode, a non-spoiler and spoiler-filled one. So you can expect probably the same, if not more, in 2019. And it looks like a killer lineup. Now, this is, like Mike said, Part 1. This is the pictures portion. We have the picks portion coming in a couple days where we're going to actually dive into the top 6 Oscar categories, review our 2018 picks of our year too early Oscar predictions. We're going to pick new picks going forward in 2019 based on just what we have done today here and picking through, like we said, the 4 acting categories, picture and director. You'll hear how right or wrong we were in 2018, and we'll give you a little more insight as to why we're picking what we are.
And the picks portion part 2, aka the predictions. Well, that's an epic fail. I had a bunch of P words ready that I lost because my brain stopped working. But part 2 will come out where we will make our predictions, and I think they will be 100% accurate.
There's no doubt. Actually, we're going to call it that because that's our thing. 100% accurate. Oscar 2020 predictions and picks after doing the pictures Porky Pig. Guys, we want to know your thoughts. Are you excited to see any of these movies? Which movies are you most excited? And which movies are you most concerned for? Reach out to us. Let us know. We are Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine. MikeMikeAndOscar.com. MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com. And MikeMikeAndOscar on Reddit. You can listen to us anywhere you hear podcasts. Tune in, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, G Play, Google Play. I keep wanting to call it G Play, but that's not a thing. Google Play, et cetera, et cetera. Michael, long episode. 2019 in preview. We're off and running. We had a nice 36-hour break between Oscar seasons, and now we're off in 2019. Any words of wisdom here to end on?
Bob Seger song, Turn the Page.
That's right, baby.
There it is.
Here we go. Guys, when reality sucks, you can come watch movies with us. Enjoy the sprint. Run us, take your marks. Let's do it. We'll see you next time.
See you.